The Paranormal Podcast is brought to you by Gaia, the streaming TV service dedicated to exploring the cutting edge of metaphysics, ancient wisdom, and the unexplained. 5,000 years of wisdom on demand. Check out 3 free episodes of Gaia's great content at jimherold.com/Gaia. That's jimherold.com/Gaia. Thanks, Gaia.
This is the Paranormal Podcast with Jim Harold.
Welcome to the Paranormal Podcast. I am Jim Harold and so glad to be with you once again. And boy, do we have an excellent show for you this week because we have some fantastic guests. First up, we're going to have Leslie Kane. She is a journalist who has worked on UFOs, for example, for many years and really takes a journalistic approach to these kind of topics that we discuss on the show. And her latest book, just out, Surviving Death, A Journalist Investigates Evidence for an Afterlife. And if you're interested in the afterlife, you need to listen to this interview and get this book. And then in part two, well, part two does not take a back seat because we have the stars of the hit TLC series Ghost Brothers with us. And they are just great guys, full of enthusiasm, kind of a different take on the paranormal. And I love it. And I know you'll love their enthusiasm and their interview, and they're in part two of the show today. By the way, I hope you'll subscribe on iTunes, the podcast app, wherever you listen, or mark us as a favorite. Rate and review us wherever you can. That's how we get the word out. And boy, the competition's getting stiff these days, but we're still keeping the battle going. But we need your help to spread the word and grow the audience. So please subscribe, rate, and review wherever you listen. Thanks so much, and here is the Paranormal Podcast. Our guest today is a great journalist, a great writer, and she's turned her attention on my absolute favorite topic in the area of the unexplained. I'm talking about Leslie Kane. She is the author of the new book, Surviving Death, A Journalist Investigates Evidence for an Afterlife. Now, if Leslie's name is familiar to her, well, she was a guest on the program several years ago when her New York Times best-selling book, UFOs, Generals, Pilots, and Government Officials Go on the Record, this is way back in 2010, she was on the show, and she's been on a ton of shows. She's just great, and I love her books. I love the way that she did the UFO book. In fact, it's sitting right on my shelf. Now, I rotate through a lot of books, but this one I've kept because I thought it was such a great job. Same thing with this book, on Surviving Death, and we're so glad to have her with us today. Leslie, welcome to the program.
Oh, thanks, Jim. Well, thank you for that introduction. It's great to be back on with you again.
So I have to ask the obvious question. Okay, I mean, I think a lot of people know you as a UFO researcher, and right. Usually kind of people who were in these 40 subjects kind of stay in their lane. Now, I'm kind of an outlier because I'll do interviews on all of this stuff across the board. Life after death, UFOs, cryptids, ghosts, whatever it might be. But most people, you know, the UFO people don't talk to the ghost people, don't talk to the afterlife people, don't talk to the cryptid people. What in the world kind of possessed you to tackle this topic?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, as you're correct in saying that my main focus has been UFOs and, you know, up for 10 years prior to when I wrote the 2010 book. But, lurking in the background, Jim, was this topic. I've been interested in it for as long as I've been interested in the UFO subject, and it was just sort of percolating in me in the background while I was doing the UFO research. And I had some opportunities. I was part of a documentary film that was made in which I got a chance to meet a lot of the key people in the field. And just my interest just gradually grew, but I didn't have the time to thoroughly investigate it. And then once I completed the UFO book, and spent, we did a documentary film the year later on UFOs, et cetera. You know, the publisher just was ready for me to do another book, and I was ready to do another book. And we discussed it, and I said, you know, this is the subject that really interests me. I'd really love to do it. And they said, go for it. So at that moment, I started, you know, focusing full time on this. And that was in early 2013, maybe 2012, and kind of phased out the UFO subject, although I keep my finger on it. But basically, I've been absorbed in this since then. But it's different in that with the UFO book, I spent 10 years and then kind of wrote the book, you know, as the result of this 10 years of work. But with this topic, I was actually exploring and having experiences with it while writing it. When I sat down to do it, there were a lot of things about it that I didn't even know how they'd come out. You know, it was much more of an explorative personal journey than the UFO book was.
Now, to me, when people will often ask me, listeners will say, well, what's your favorite topic or what thing, if you could answer one question, what would it be? And my comeback is, and I've said this many times, so if I bore you, if you've heard it out there, but I said, you know, we might not all see a UFO. We might not all, you know, see Bigfoot or a doppelganger or all these kind of really wild things may not happen to us. But I do have news for everybody who's listening to my voice, including myself. We're all going to die. That's the one common thing that we all have. That and taxes. And I don't pretend to explain the IRS. So I guess my point is to me, it is the ultimate mystery. And I think if this mystery could be solved, and I don't know that it can, but if it could be solved, it would answer, I think, many, many more questions.
I agree. And I think it would have way more of an impact on human beings and the lives of human beings. I mean, the question of, are we alone in the universe is a huge question, but the question of, do we survive death, I agree with you, is really a bigger question. But they're both essential to the sort of essence of who we are as people and what our role is in the universe and everything. So, but I agree, if we could ever solve this question, it would have a major impact on people. And what I've tried to do in this book is just provide what I think is the absolute most compelling data from many different areas of research that point in that direction. But I think you're right, Jim. I don't think we're ever going to be able to prove it. But you never know. You never know what might happen in the future with technology and, you know, things as they develop. Maybe there will be a way to become more definitive about it.
Yeah, maybe we can develop Edison's telephone.
Exactly. But, you know, there is so much suggestive information that is so hard to explain in any other way. And people have to make up their own minds. But it's very, very compelling, I think.
Now, you break down the book into four parts, and I'm just going to go part by part here. And the first one fascinates me because I've always been interested in the subject of reincarnation. Now, it goes against the current version of Christianity, which is kind of what I've grown up in, and I still consider myself the Christian faith. So sometimes I struggle with it. But I hear people say, well, reincarnation was kind of written out of the Christian religion at the Council of Nicaea. So, and I'm not enough of a scholar to know if that's true or not. But the point is that even myself, I have these small memories that I don't know if it's from very young childhood, but then I question myself, could it have been from a previous life? And then you hear these great tales in the work of Stevenson and Jim B. Tucker, the University of Virginia, and those kind of things about reincarnation, and it suddenly becomes very compelling.
I agree with you, and I think what's really compelling about it is the fact that what I focused on and what I think what Dr. Tucker focuses on is the fact that these are very, very young children who are having these memories. They've had no influences on them that would, you know, produce the kind of memories that they're having. They're extremely emotional. They have nightmares. They play act the professions that they had in the previous life. They have very, very specific memories. And we're talking about children often that are only 2 years old. And the cases that are really significant are those in which they're after the child has made all the statements, and they've all been recorded by somebody, either an investigator or a family member, then later researchers are able to find that actual person. So they're able to find the family of that person and research them through archival records and so on. And they're able to confirm that the memories were accurate to one specific person who the child claimed that they were. So these are not just sort of fly-by-night fantasies that, you know, that they will never be able to be explained. They actually are shown to be accurate. And that's what's so fascinating to me. And your comment about Christianity is really interesting also, Jim, because in the famous case of James Leininger, what I've done in my book is I've invited his dad to contribute a series of excerpts to this story, because he was a devout Christian when all of this stuff began with his son. And he went through a real spiritual struggle to come to terms with the possibility that his son might have been remembering a past life, and he did everything he could to prove his son wrong because of his Christian faith, because it couldn't he couldn't accept it. But he went through a spiritual process, a transformation in which he was able to reconcile this reality with his Christian faith. And I think that I thought that story, to weaving that into the story of his son's memories, might be really interesting to readers. And I think you've just brought it up as something that's interesting to you. So I think that's significant.
What is your favorite story of the ones that you've researched? Is it the Leininger story? Which one is the one that really speaks to you, and can you talk about a little bit?
You mean in terms of the child reincarnation? Yes.
Yes.
You know, I like to, I try to avoid even using the word reincarnation because it's so loaded. You know, gotcha. I think people think of it as being from an Eastern religion or something, but it's really children with memories of something that they say is a past life. I think, I mean, the James Leininger case is fascinating. Also fascinating is the case of Ryan Hammonds, which may be less known to people mm-hmm. who haven't looked into this before. I mean, his case is extraordinary. And these are both contemporary. Ryan was born, I think, in 2004. I mean, you know, these are both very recent cases. And, yeah, he was born in 2004. And, you know, what's extraordinary about this case is that this child had 55 memories that were proven to be accurate. I mean, that's really, there are very few cases in which the child has that many memories. That was, it's a long story. It's also extraordinary in that he recognized himself from a photograph. He pointed to a photograph in a book from an old 1932 obscure movie.
Right. I know the story, yeah.
Said, you know, that's me, Mommy, you found me. And he had also given a lot of detail, so they had something to go on. They had to try to find the identity of this person in the photograph. And that was very difficult to do because he had no lines. He was just an extra. But in the meantime, Ryan was giving all these factual memories, and they were being recorded. They were being written down and put in the file of Dr. Jim Tucker at the University of Virginia. So there was a record of them when they were said before anybody ever knew who the previous person was. And that's a very important component. Because skeptics like to say, well, maybe the parents changed them later or something to match the person. But we know that didn't happen in this case because we had experts investigating it all along. And so they eventually did locate, find out who the person was. They met with his daughter from his previous, you know, who was 8 years old when he died in the past life. And, you know, what can you do? I mean, I don't know how to explain it. Ryan was extremely affected by his memories of this person. He had nightmares. He sometimes couldn't even separate himself from that identity. And it was a process of, you know, a lot of discovery. And he was eventually sort of healed by the whole thing. Once they discover who the person is, they take the child back to the location often where they grew up, the house that they lived in the past life. Meeting the previous family members, things like that tend to sort of heal them from the whatever is unresolved in them, and they go on with their lives in the present and can let it all go. And that's what tends to happen. So I think that case is another fascinating one. And I've actually have the mom, Ryan's mom, actually wrote her own chapter in my book just describing what it was like for her to go through this and how it all unfolded. So I love being able to offer chapters to people to write them themselves so that the reader can hear directly from them and not just from me. So I think that adds a lot to the book as well.
I agree. That's a nice device that you're using that really kind of gives another side of the story and the personal side. Now, and you mentioned something there that I think that is important because, you know, for me, when I hear these stories, even though I consider myself a, quote, skeptical believer, the skeptic part comes out. It's like, oh, well, this person, not saying this specific case, but a child could be coached by their parents. This could be a hoax. They might have researched somebody and then kind of fed this to this child to pair it back. But the nice thing here is that my understanding in interviewing him and talking with him, the Dr. Tucker is very aware of that kind of thing, very cognizant, and they control as best they can for those kind of intervening variables. They try to make sure that that is not the case, and they have their eyes wide open and really try to guard against that kind of thing.
I think that's absolutely right. I mean, I think the case of Ryan Hammonds, this is, you know, this family living in a small town in Oklahoma with a photograph of somebody. I mean, they tried desperately to find out who that person was on the internet. They couldn't find out anything. So they're really, the only way they were able to find the identity of this person was to hire a film archivist, which was done through a production company. I mean, the Hammonds family would never have even thought about how to do this, you know. There was a production company interested. They hired this expert film archivist. That person had to fly out to Los Angeles and spend a lot of time looking through lots of files at this massive, you know, film archive in Los Angeles. And eventually this person found this file with this photograph that identified the person. But that's not something that the Hammonds family could have done. It's just not feasible. And they didn't do it. I mean, and also, you know, Jim, a lot of these parents suffer. It's not like they would ever want this to happen,
right,
or create it. You know, it's very traumatic for them to see their child suffering like this. The child is, you know, can't sleep. They're upset. They cry. They miss their previous family, all these things. It's observed by other members of the family and friends, and there's no way that a small child could be taught to behave like this for some kind of hoax. I mean, the whole thing is just inconceivable that it could be a hoax.
And these memories, though, seem to fade over time. They get, quote, further from the past life, the previous life, it starts to fade over time. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, that's the general situation, and especially if the child has had some resolution where the previous personality has been located and they've had some way of, as I said, visiting the previous home or meeting the previous family, something that kind of connects to them that this is really in the past. You know, it shows them that, and then they're able to move on. But even the ones that aren't resolved like that, they do tend to forget about them. I think it's normally by the time they're 6, 7, 8, when they start school, and they do fade. I mean, James Leininger, the little boy who remembered being the World War II pilot, doesn't remember any of the memories now. He doesn't deny that they were there, of course, but he doesn't have them in his brain as a memory. So that does generally happen. That Ryan was a little different, though. He remembers more of this than most children do at his age. He's now 10. Maybe he's 11 by now. But he does remember quite a bit of it. So I think the fact that he had so many memories makes him kind of unusual. And that may be why he remembers more of them at an older age, because there were so many.
Now, and after this, I want to move on to the next section. But is there ever a case, and I've heard of this kind of thing anecdotally, but anything that you found where maybe a personality trait continues, or maybe a gift? I'm thinking of something like music. Are these things that continue into the next lifetime, apparently, sometimes?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I can't think of anything really striking, but you know, the children do sometimes have knowledge, I mean, extraordinary knowledge of things that the previous personality had, or they'll know something about the profession. You know, like James knew all this stuff about details about aircraft that he couldn't possibly have learned at two years old. He could differentiate the different mechanical aspects of a specific, you know, the different types of aircraft that were used in World War II. So, and you know, but there, I suspect there are cases of children who can play music or do, you know, accomplish certain things. I don't know specifically. I couldn't cite any cases. But it makes you wonder about prodigies. I mean, this is just pure speculation, but it does make you wonder about musical prodigies who seem to know how to play the piano when they're 3 years old, you know, things like that. Maybe that does come from a previous life. We don't know.
Now, the next thing I would like to talk about is the idea of the near-death experience, the out-of-body experience, the person who has a medical trauma. They apparently go over and visit the other side, or just come to the cusp of crossing over. They come back and they tell these magnificent stories of tunnels of light and seeing loved ones and feeling warmth and a bright sense of light and all of these things. And then you have the skeptics who say, well, you know, you see similar type hallucinations in astronauts who are in the test machine. They call it the vomit comet, and they have almost near death experience like experiences. So the skeptics say, oh, this is just the self-defense mechanism of the brain. What did you find in the area of near-death experience?
Well, there's a lot of things, but just to address specifically what you just brought up, I mean, I rely a lot on the information provided by Dr. Pim von Lommel, who actually wrote an absolutely, I think, stunning chapter in my book, who's been involved with this topic for a long time. And he makes a point about hallucinations. Number one, the events that are interesting to science are ones that occur when there is no brain activity in the person. They are essentially dead. They have no heartbeat. They're often going through cardiac arrest. They have no brain function. So that differentiates them from, I guess, from people that are in rockets or whatever. But for number one, they have no brain activity. So you need, in order to hallucinate, you have to have brain activity. The other point about hallucinations is that usually they involve very bizarre, you know, hallucinations are very strange and you don't necessarily remember them afterward. They don't leave any kind of impression on you. They're sort of chaotic. And indeed, with these experiences, these people say that, first of all, they're based in, you know, the OBEs are based in reality, which hallucinations aren't. Anyway, hallucinations are not based in reality. They're sort of crazy, chaotic imagery, and they don't leave a lasting impression on the person. And with NDEs and these vertical OBEs that we can talk about, people say that their perceptions are actually heightened, that they're greater, they're more aware than they are in normal waking consciousness, and they have a huge lasting effect on the person, removing all their fear of death and providing often, you know, psychic abilities and perceptions that they didn't have before. So for all those reasons, hallucinations just do not explain the phenomena of the NDE. And maybe we could talk a little about veridical OBEs. Are you
please
interested
do.
In
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, because I think those are really more evidential than NDEs, because NDEs are very subjective. You know, a person will describe going off on this journey, which is fascinating, has a huge effect on their lives, and they are quite universal. You know, what people describe are similar throughout cultures and different age groups and all of that. But the thing about what they call veridical OBEs are when people leave their bodies when they have no brain function and no heartbeat, and they are when they come back, they're able to describe with accuracy things that they saw and things that they heard mm-hmm. in the room in which they were, or sometimes they'll travel to another room. But they're things that can actually be verified afterwards. So a person might be up at the ceiling, and he might describe, this is one example that actually happened, a person described seeing that one of the people working on him was bald. Now, you could only see that from above the person, not from the bed.
Right.
And they described the sounds that the machines were making. And because, you know, this, and when you're unconscious, of course, you don't hear anything or see anything. But these people could, so he described the bald head and also the sound that this repetitive machine was making at certain timed intervals. And through that, they were able to determine that the moments that he was actually out of his body, if you're willing to accept that that's what was happening, coincided with when he was deeply, deeply unconscious. Because some of the skeptics will sometimes say, oh, maybe it's happened before he was really unconscious, or maybe it happened just after he came back to consciousness. But when they can report specific events that occurred outside their bodies, then they can time them. And so when you have things like that where a person reports sounds and sights when they have no brain activity, and they describe them from a perspective of being up at a ceiling, you know, it's very hard to say to them, well, we don't think you were really out of your body. They are completely clear that they had left their bodies. And so when you have that kind of evidence for that, I find it very, very significant. And it really suggests that consciousness can exist independently of the brain. And that's what's important about these experiences, is that they establish that. And that lets us go further and ask, well, if that's the case, perhaps when we lose our bodies at the end of our lives, then consciousness can continue, because we can see here that it functions independently of the brain. And that's why these experiences are so important, as far as I'm concerned.
And there's a story, and I may be misquoting it. It's from Dr. Raymond Moody, who I've always wanted to have on the show. And if Dr. Moody, you hear this by some miracle, I hope you'll join me. But there was this one story of this woman who had a near-death experience, and she said that she, I believe that she went to the places of people that she loved, almost like to say goodbye. And one person was, I think it may have been a twin sister, And her sister was in a totally different city, several states away. And she remembered seeing her sister, like visiting her sister at the supermarket. And it turned out after the fact that it was able to be verified that her sister was indeed shopping when she had this medical crisis and almost died. And I think that's really interesting, that kind of ability to go places and see things that, you know, physically you couldn't do.
I agree with you. There are, I've read other cases like that, exactly. And, you know, people can, I mean, people like Stephen Browdy will raise the very legitimate question of whether events like that could have to do with some kind of psychic, advanced psychic perception that the person has, as opposed to actually, you know, literally traveling to that location. Maybe they're using clairvoyance or something like that to see the person in the supermarket. I mean, there are possibly, you know, there could be other explanations for it, but that's just to make that point. But yes, there are cases, and there are also cases of people who have near-death experiences and they encounter a person that they either didn't know existed or that they didn't know had died. And that's also interesting when they come back. One, I think there was a little girl that Bruce Grayson reported. It was a child who came back and said, I saw somebody there who said, they were my sibling, but I don't have a sibling. And this person insisted that they were the sibling who had died. And she learned from her parent that she actually had a sibling who died, but maybe before she was born or something like that. And they'd never told her. So things like that happen, which are somewhat evidential, that when people have these encounters with people they didn't even know existed. Similar, you know, so anyway, there's this very suggestive and powerful material there. But I think the key element of all of this is the establishment of the fact that consciousness seems to be able to exist independently of the brain. And that's crucial to being able to accept the possibility of survival after death.
And that is a possibility we're exploring today, the possibility of surviving death. It's also the title of the new book by Leslie Kane, and she is our guest on the Paranormal Podcast, and we'll be back right after this. The Paranormal Podcast is brought to you by Gaia, the streaming TV service dedicated to exploring the cutting edge of metaphysics, ancient wisdom, and the unexplained. Keep listening here because I'm going to tell you how you can sample some of the best programming Gaia has to offer for absolutely free. You're listening to this program, and that means you love this type of information. You want the cutting edge of metaphysics, ancient wisdom, and the unexplained, but where do you go if you want a streaming TV service video dedicated to the topics that we love? And there is an answer, and that answer is Gaia. Gaia explores the topics we love and is always providing viewers with tremendous new content. Now, over the last several months, I've been telling you about all the different shows that Gaia has to offer, but this week, I want to tell you something different. I'm going to tell you how you can check out three free episodes of some of the best programming Gaia has to offer. Now, first of all, I'm going to tell you the three free episodes of premium Gaia content that you can check out for absolutely free. The first free episode that you can check out is Buzzsaw. That's a series hosted by Sean Stone, and he's going to talk about forbidden knowledge for a new age. That's in this free episode that you can check out. Basically, the idea of this episode is the power that the dark forces once held over the world is beginning to wane as the collective power of humanity continues to wax. And again, you can get that free preview, and we're going to tell you how in just a minute. Secondly, Beyond Belief, hosted by the great George Norrie, and he's going to talk about the truth on UFO case files. His guest is going to be former British Ministry of Defense official Nick Pope. He's been on our shows. He's fantastic. That one's going to be available on his free preview. And then the third episode, last but certainly not least, Truth Hunter, hosted by the one and only Linda Moulton Howe, the unheard truth behind Roswell's UFOs. And she's going to talk about Roswell, and she's going to expose details of technologies recovered from UFO crashes in the 40s and the resultant government policies which instituted programs of secrecy and denial. All three of those episodes I listed right there. You can listen to for free, and here's how you do it. Check out these three free episodes of Gaia's great content at jimherald.com/Gaia. Right there, I will have links to those episodes. Again, it's jimherold.com/GAIA. jimherold.com/Gaia. Try it out. You have literally nothing to lose, everything to gain, 5,000 years of wisdom on demand. Thanks, Gaia. We're back on the Paranormal Podcast with Leslie Kane. She is a New York Times best-selling author, and her latest book is a new one. It's called Surviving Death, A Journalist Investigates Evidence for an Afterlife. Leslie, you also cover in here communication from the other realms. I mean, to this point, we've talked more about the person who has died or the experiencer, but I think this section is a little more about us over here communicating with them over there. What were you trying to get out at this section, communication from other realms?
Well, that's right. I mean, if we, as we just talked about, if we can establish that non-local, what we call non-local consciousness exists, that consciousness is not dependent on the body, then I think, you know, I kind of go through this and I raise these interesting questions. If we can establish that, then the question arises, if there's these consciousnesses existing in some other dimension, can we communicate with them? Wouldn't that be one way to determine whether they're actually there or not? And so in exploring the answer to that question, we get into mediumship, in which I explore in my book. There's various types of mediumship. The most basic one is what we call mental mediumship, which I'm sure a lot of your listeners have been to mediums, where you sit down with them or you're on the phone and you have readings, and they claim to be connecting with your particular loved one, and they bring in information about them. And so I was very interested to test, you know, being skeptical about all of this, like I'm sure many people are. I wanted to test it for myself, as well as looking at research on it and so on, which I do present in the book, but also my own personal tests of this, which I conducted with two very excellent mediums and had really, really interesting results. And I do report on that in the book. So, you know, it's one of the things I like about this field too, Jim. With UFOs, you can't test anything. You either see one or you don't. You know, you're lucky, right, or you're not lucky. But with this, you can go out there and say, well, I'm going to check this out for myself and find out what it's about. And so that's what this is the first things that I did in terms of personal testing and experiences, was to engage with these mental mediums. And it was fascinating, absolutely fascinating what happened. And I was fortunate to find two outstanding ones. And I was able to work with them in situations where they couldn't possibly have known anything about me, particularly the second one. She knew absolutely nothing about me, not even my name, because I made up a fake name, used a fake address, set up an email account just for this, and nothing. She didn't even know where on the planet I was, because we talked through Skype out of the computer. And so it was absolutely incredible to sit down with this woman who knew nothing about me and hear her provide all this very, very accurate information about two people in my life who had died fairly recently. And that was the experience I had. And then you have to kind of come to terms with how you're going to interpret it. And the problem, the key issue with mental mediumship is that we can't, you know, there's no way to prove whether that information is coming directly from the deceased people, as the mediums believe it is, or whether the mediums are using their own psychic abilities to access this information either from the sitter or from some other location on the earth. I mean, that's the big debate.
Now, let me ask you this. Would it possible, because until I was looking at your book, I didn't realize other people were thinking this, and I was thinking the same thing. Well, maybe the psychic is being perfectly honest. They believe they're contacting a dead person. They're actually essentially reading your mind. But would one way of proving that be this? Has there ever been a case, and I'm guessing there has, where a medium has been able to come across with information from the deceased that the sitter doesn't know but is later verified to be true in the world?
That is absolutely true, Jim. There are cases like that. And, you know, sometimes a sitter will receive information and say, that doesn't make any sense to me. That's wrong. And the medium will say, well, just make a note of it. They've done this with me. Just make a note of it. And then 2 weeks later, the sitter will go and ask their father, was this true about my brother who died? And the father will say, yes, you know, you just, so yes, that does happen. But still, the people believing in the what we call the living agent psi hypothesis, the hypothesis that this does not involve dead people, can you know, say that this medium was still using her psychic abilities to access the information, even if it wasn't through the sitter's mind. You have to postulate, as Stephen Browdy does, that these abilities, these psychic abilities, may be unlimited. They may be so great, you know, in the people that have this gift, that they can access information not only from the sitter but from the sitter's family. They can see things clairvoyantly from that maybe no one in the family even knows about. You know, they might know where something's located and be able to read it. So there's really, if you're going to accept the theories of Stephen Browdy, who I highly respect, he's postulating that there is no limit to this ability, and therefore how can we say whether it's psychic or not, you know? And it's just up to the individual to decide how they want to interpret it. But all I can say is that when you have the experience yourself, and you've probably had this, Jim, you know, of having a very powerful reading, it has a big effect on you.
Sure.
And it is hard to accept, if it's a really, really good one, that this is, that, you know, this just the psychic perceptions of this medium. But nonetheless, it's still something we can't rule out. There's just no way to prove it.
If I recall correctly, in the book, you kind of state that, you know, even though, you know, you had this, I think specifically with the one situation with your brother, that it was so vibrant that it really made more of an impression on you than any study, academic study or research that you had read. Having the experience just kind of cut through everything and made it all the more real.
That's true. And I think even more than the readings, Jim, that happened, I had some experiences of after-death communications, which is when you take all of this a step further and you ask, if mediums can communicate with these deceased people, is there a way that these deceased people can reach us directly without an intermediary, without a medium? Do people, you know, and there are cases where people perceive that they are receiving direct communications themselves from their deceased loved ones. And these are even more powerful because there's no intermediary. But they're also not evidential. They're pretty much just the person telling their story of what happened to them. But for me personally, I had quite a few extraordinary experiences that I believed at the time were coming from my brother. Now, I know there's no way that I can know that for sure, and there really isn't. I accept that. But those experiences really, as you point out, have more impact. I mean, I'm sure anybody can understand that. You know, you can read all kinds of studies that are amazing and that show the reality of lots of phenomena, but when they happen to you directly and when you witness things that you've read about but, you know, have never seen yourself, such as I did with physical mediumship, it is just that it takes you to another level of understanding and of connection to the material. So, and those are the things that have the biggest effect on you. I mean, I think that would be true for anyone, even if you can't explain for sure where the information is coming from. It still has, you know, it's nothing like a personal experience. And that's what I like to say to the skeptics, Jim. You know, when you have these debunkers who are absolutely negative about and saying none of this can exist, but they've, you know, wait, what would they say if these things happened to them personally?
Well, it's funny you mention that because, and I'm guessing you're familiar with this, is Dr. Michael Shermer. He's been a guest on the show and was a very nice guy. Probably mm-hmm. couldn't disagree with him more, but he was very courteous and nice to be on the show. And he wrote in Scientific American a couple of years ago about an experience he had with his bride. He got married in the last few years, and a radio that had belonged to her grandfather had not worked for years. She was commenting that day, gosh, I wish Grandpa were here. This radio started working, worked the whole day of their marriage, then stopped the next day, and they could never get it running again. And he said something akin, and I don't want to misquote him, but something mm-hmm. along the lines of, well, of course, the rational explanation is this is paranormal, but of course it's not. You know, and it's like, yeah. Oh my gosh, come on now. Come on, you got to at least have a little bit of an open mind here. But I even applaud him. I do applaud him for even writing the article and admitting it. And I think
that's a fairly minor experiment. I mean, imagine if that radio went on and the grandfather's voice came out of it.
Yeah,
something like that.
Yeah,
I mean, just having something go on like that for a day. I mean, yes, that's very interesting, but there are way more dramatic occurrences that have happened to people that I think if they happened to even to someone like Michael Shermer, he would have to think twice about how he was going to explain them. So, I just wish all these skeptics could have some of these experiences, and I'd love to hear what they had to say about it.
And if you're looking for that article, anybody out there, it's called Anomalous Events That Can Shake One's Skepticism to the Core. I just witnessed an event so mysterious that it shook my skepticism. We'll send you the link.
I'd like to read that. Anomalous. Can you send me the link? That would be great.
I will send you the link. Absolutely.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
So, after-death communications, I've had one in my favorite story. And again, it's a song on the radio. And that's something that's really tricky because, if you're talking about a super popular song, it could just be mere coincidence. But, and I'll retell the story. And if you've been listening for the last 12 years, you've probably heard this about 50 times, but I'll tell it to Leslie so I can communicate it.
Great. Yeah.
My brother passed in 1999. He was very young. He was in his late 20s. He had autism and he loved music and he loved all kinds of music. He loved country music. He loved soul music. He used to love we grew up in the 70s as little kids. And he loved that show, Soul Train. And then he also loved, of all people, Lawrence Welk. So we were driving back from his funeral, my wife and I, very sad. And flipping through the stations, we were in a rural area. And anybody that's driven through rural areas, pre-satellite radio and streaming and all that fun stuff, you get a radio station for a while, 10, 20 minutes, and it would go away. And so we were playing that game and we ran across one of the Music of Your Life stations. They don't have that many of them anymore, but they play like Frank Sinatra, Dean Martin, Nat King Cole. And I've always kind of enjoyed that kind of music along with many other types. So I said, well, we'll take a listen to this. And there was an instrumental that started to play. And I'm like, boy, that sounds familiar. That sounds really, but I can't place the band. And I'm pretty good about that era of music, Glenn Miller or any of that kind of stuff. I could pretty much identify it, but I couldn't identify this. And the DJ came on the back announce. He said, of course, that was the big 1960 hit Calcutta by Lawrence Welk and his orchestra.
Wow. Was that your brother's favorite song?
It was his favorite artist. He wasn't real communicative, right. But when Lawrence Welk was coming on television, he would write it out in kind of a scrawl and show it to people and tell them to record it. He'd spell out the word tape. So it was a very significant, was probably the most significant person who was not like really popular, who could have been on at any time. And I mean, I don't think I've ever heard Lawrence Welk on the radio again, or even before that. So it's just a very odd thing.
Yeah. Those kinds of events are very, very meaningful to the people who perceive them. And that's what's important about them. They're very meaningful. And some of them are so dramatic that, you get psychokinesis and all kinds of stuff going on that you have to assume is either the deceased person, affecting that, which is what the recipient usually feels, or it's somehow the recipient's mind that's making these things happen. And just like with the mental medium, she can't always prove it one way or the other, but what you do know is that the event actually happened, and you do know how meaningful it is to you as the person receiving it. And that's, to me, what's important about them.
You had an interesting story about one of our favorite people in the field, Lloyd Auerbach, and something that happened to him after the death of a close colleague and friend. I thought that was an interesting story.
Pretty amazing. I'm sure you've had Lloyd on your show before, right?
Oh, many times. In fact, he was the first guest we ever had on the show. And I just talked to him about 2 weeks ago. So he comes on at least every other year.
He's a great guy. And he's a great investigator, but of course he's also had a lot of his own interesting experiences. I think the one you're referring to is we're involved the death of a close friend of his whose name was Martin Caden.
Yes.
Yeah. And he died in 1997. And Caden had been very interested in paranormal and psychokinetic phenomena and things like that. And so, Lloyd knew him very well, and he 9 days after Marty died, he was driving in a car along a California freeway, and it was actually a new car, and suddenly he sensed this presence, but more importantly, the car filled up with the smell of cigars, and nobody had been in that car who smoked, and Lloyd instantly recognized this as the specific type of cigar smell that Marty had often smoked when he was alive. And as far as he was concerned, this was Marty sending him a message. But what makes it even more interesting is that when he arrived at his destination, he called a pilot friend of his on the East Coast because he wanted to share with this man what had happened to him, to tell him about that he heard this, smelled the cigar smoke from in his car from Marty. Before he could say anything to this person on the phone, the pilot told Lloyd, "Hey, guess what? I can hardly believe what this happened, but around 10 o'clock Eastern time, I felt a presence in the cockpit of my airplane, and then I smelled the cigar smoke that was the same kind of cigar that Marty used to speak." And it just so happened that that 10 a.m. time coincided with the 7 a.m. time on the West Coast. So the point is that this had happened to two people at exactly the same time. And in fact, they found out that a third person had the same experience around the same time, maybe a few minutes later. So, you know, that's very hard to explain as some kind of human-generated phenomenon because, you know, if it was, I mean, a human-generated phenomenon would very unlikely happen with three different people in different locations at the same time. As far as I'm concerned, that's pretty extreme to be able to
say,
well,
it seems
you know,
it's
psychic abilities of these people who miss their friends so much that this event happened because they created it with their own psychic powers. I mean, no. Three of them at the same time and the same specific event, you know, very unlikely. So I think that's a really strong case of an after-death communication that's very compelling.
It seems like it is to me. And this entire book, I feel, is compelling. As we close out here, how did this project change you? I mean, what impact did it have on you? How has your opinion changed? What are your thoughts after having gone through this project?
Well, I would say, you know, there are two components of it. One is the research element, and one is the personal experience element. And both of them just opened me up to a whole possible reality that I really was not aware of. As I said, I'd been interested in it for years, but delving into it at this deep level, it really did change me because it exposed me to greater mysteries, for one thing, both experientially and research, you know, things that are just impossible to explain. And it's pointing towards the possible survival of after death. So that, of course, has a big effect on anybody to discover that that's a very conceivable and even rational interpretation of the data that's out there. So yeah, it really expanded me. It made me realize more how much we don't know, you know, how much science avoids dealing with these absolutely fascinating mysteries that are happening in our world that they don't want to deal with. I find that very sad, really, that there isn't more curiosity among scientists to explore some of these things, particularly the things with physical mediumship, which people can read about in the book, where you can demonstrate these amazing things over and over again, and they can be studied, but the scientists don't want to even accept that they occur. So it's very expanding for me, and also humbling to know that we may survive death. And also there's so much we don't understand about our world and our physical world and the worlds that might exist beyond the physical world. And I like being in the place of sort of being in touch with mysteries, with being a sense of a great mystery out there and, you know, how much we don't know about reality. And that always excites me because it makes me want to try to dig in and learn more about it and probe those mysteries. And so I find that very meaningful. And I hope the readers, people that read the book, will feel the same way.
Well, if we want to dig in and get the book and learn more, I know you can get the book pretty much anywhere, but you can give us the details. And also there's a website. So please do tell us about both.
Yeah, my website is called Surviving Death Kane. So it's the name of the book plus my last name, which is spelled K-E-A-N, Surviving Death Kane. And on that website, there's information about the book. I've got some excerpts posted and various things posted, and very easy to order it from the website. We've got order buttons for all these different locations. People can get it in their bookstores or anywhere online. There's also an audio book and an ebook that's available. So I just suggest going to the website, and it'll be very easy for people to find out more and to buy it if they choose to do that. I also have a very active Facebook page, and I would encourage anybody who has questions or wants to connect to come on to that Facebook page. It's an author page. It doesn't require any kind of friending or anything like that. And I have ongoing discussions about topics in the book. So I hope people will join me there as well. And look forward to hearing from your readers, your listeners, I guess they are. Readers and listeners.
Yes, yes, yes. I hope that they're both. And we appreciate your time today and a little bit of synchronicity / serendipity. Now, this will be released on March 7th, but we're actually recording this in February. And on my phone, Leslie, mm-hmm. popped up, NASA announces discovery of 7 Earth-like planets around a single star. So maybe that could be part of your next book on UFOs.
Oh, that's so exciting, because I knew they were going to make a big announcement today. I just didn't know what it was going to be.
I had to laugh when I saw that pop up on my phone while we were talking, because not only are you an expert in this area, you're also obviously a great research in the UFO area. Always good to connect with you, and I hope next time it'll be sooner than 7 years, but a pleasure to speak with you always.
Thank you so much, Jim. It was great to be on your show. Thank you.
I really enjoyed talking to Leslie about this topic. Utterly fascinating to me. And I'd check out that book if I were you. I've really enjoyed it. And I enjoyed this interview, which you will hear now. This is an exciting show. I am really enthused about tonight. I think you're going to be ready to get scared silly. The hit show Ghost Brothers is returning for an all-new season, this time on TLC. It will be debuting Friday, March 10th at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 Central on TLC. It's a big deal. And because of that, we have the 3 stars of said show, Dalen Spratt, Juwan Mass, and Marcus Harvey. The Ghost Brothers are joining us to talk about Ghost Brothers. Gentlemen, welcome to the program tonight.
Oh, man, how's it going?
Very good.
I thought I'd add the applause in the crowd, you know.
There you go. I like the sound effects. It's good to have you guys on the show. The thing is that I know you guys bring a sense of fun to this, and it's got to be, I'll start with Marcus. Marcus, it's got to be really exciting. You guys are now going to be on TLC, a lot more exposure. I just think it's fantastic. It must be exciting for y'all.
Yes, it's a very exciting time. I mean, it's just amazing to see that we're able to not only just, open up the genre to diversity, but also open it up to, different types of, investigating. We really believe that, if you were able to kind of have a humor in the natural life, that in the afterlife, you would probably said have the same type of humor, and you would probably be a lot more open to making contact with, a person who, is more lively than dead. Pun intended. Yeah. Pun intended, because it's lively.
I'll ask Dalen. Dalen, do ghosts have a sense of humor?
Oh, man, for sure. For sure. Ghosts are very petty, man, and they love to play around. In this season, they seem to be flirting. That's something that's new to me.
Oh, boy. I don't know. I don't know if I want to be on the other end of that, but it might be interesting, if it's like a really attractive ghost. But Juwan, how did you guys get into it? And Dalen and Marcus, you can chime in too. How did you all get into the paranormal? What kind of hooked you about this?
I would definitely have to say, with our religious backgrounds, we've already had like a connection to the afterlife, right? So this is kind of, a different take on it, because, growing up in the church, like we were, it was frowned upon to mess with anything that one would consider demonic. And I think this is one of those things that people consider demonic until you really get into it. But we all had experiences in the past, man. I had experiences growing up as a child, running through a graveyard, man, feeling like something was chasing me. I know Daylon had experiences in Texas, where he's from, where, what was it, at an old church, right, Daylon?
Yeah, man, I've seen, you know, having experiences at an old church. And I think us just sitting around, man, talking as friends and realizing that you have these similar stories and these similar, you know, interests that you haven't ever spoken to anyone about, it kind of draws you closer. And I remember just watching a few television shows, man, and thinking, like, I don't see any black people on TV doing it. And I was like, I wonder, is that something to that? Like, what's the reason behind there aren't being, you know, any minorities on television hunting ghosts? You know, just talking to Juwan and, you know, and then later on Marcus, it, you know, we put the connection. It has to be our spiritual background, the way that we was brought up, the way that we was taught to not play with spirits and not, you know, you don't mess with that realm and you don't question certain things.
Oh, yeah.
But then, you know, as an adult, it's like, yeah, as an adult now, we have the freedom to question certain things. And I don't feel like that goes against our religious background. It just opens us up to, you know, to true belief, I guess, and understanding.
I personally, it makes me believe more in God that all of this stuff exists. You know, the thing gets me is when people say, well, you know, I go to church every Sunday, but I don't believe in like all this supernatural stuff. And it's like, wait a minute. The whole church is supernatural.
Right.
It's a whole thing, right?
Yeah. How do you not believe it?
That's right. That's right. Marcus, what about your thoughts on all this?
I mean, I think with what was so amazing about it is like he said earlier, like Daylon and Juwan said, they were actually friends prior to it and, you know, roommates. And, you know, when Daylon thought about, you know, why isn't there anybody, you know, with in diversity on this, in this type of genre, like at the time I was cutting his hair. So he kind of brought up the same point to me. And I was like, bruh, first off, I don't believe in no ghosts. I believe in the Holy Ghost. Come on, mm-hmm. church. You know what I'm saying? But, it was like, you know, I was like, but, you know, I don't try anything. And so, you know, the fellas kind of like talked me into it. And then bada bing, bada boom, you know, my interest has grown since, you know what I'm saying? Now we're a lot smoother in our investigations. Like, we don't just play around with the spirits. I want to make sure that that's definitely like made clear. We never just play around with anything, any type of spirits, you know. You know, we may be sometimes a little naive to some situations, but we typically are kind of covered in our spiritual beliefs, you know, that we'll be all right in those situations, you know, because we mean well. But it's just like we just have an open-mindedness about how we investigate. Just like with any other detective in any other type of situation, you know, there's different types of styles on how they get to the bottom of the case, and that's how we do it.
Now, when you talk about your style, obviously you have a lot of humor in all of this and you have fun with it. But like in investigating, some people really love all the gear, love the equipment. Some people go in with a pen and paper and just use their ears and their eyes and they feel. Where do you guys fall on that? Are you big into the technology? Do you like a mix? How do you each like to approach it? And I'll just have all three of you go around and give your thoughts on it.
Okay, well, this is Daylon. I think for me personally, like we love using equipment. We're using a lot more equipment this season, but I think nothing beats, honestly, personality. And I think that's what works for us. It's us being us in these environments. And I think that we go into every location with respect, and we go into it with like an open heart, and we go into it with a sense of humor. Because we figure, man, everybody loves to laugh, man. Even the meanest, most hardened person, man, loves to laugh. And I feel like if people can respond to, like, anger or can respond to aggression, why can't someone respond to, you know, laughter or joyfulness? I don't know. I just, like, you have to. So I think that's what works for us.
Juwan?
Well, I would say we would fall between, if it's between like a pen and pad and it's like between all of the equipment, we're kind of somewhere in the middle, but we bring our own flair to it. I definitely, to piggyback off Daylon, we use equipment because it just has a certain connection to paranormal investigating, right? Like people really take viewership, takes it serious, and then even people in the field who are, like we all take the idea of understanding how this equipment works serious. But we realize there's another take on it, and that's our, we call it visual provoking. to where we'll reenact a storyline that happens to maybe conjure up some activity. I think that's something different that we do.
That is different.
I think that we'll even in season one, we took time to read some of the old letters that were written between the lover and the two lovers, one that allegedly killed herself and her lover. Mm-hmm. And that is something that's different, right? Like you have a more interactive approach with the spirits as opposed to coming in from a antagonistic perspective. You know what I mean?
I gotcha. What about you, Marcus? Where do you fall? Do you like all the gadgets or gizmos, or you just use your senses?
Man, listen, like I said, we are very versatile in how we approach it. Like we try whatever gets the job done. I think I look at it like we just try to find every tool we could possibly use. If it might be some wind chimes, maybe the spirits might want to talk to us through the wind chimes. We'll bring some wind chimes out. If somebody wants to bring out a boombox, you know, and break dance or do some electric sliding, we'll do the electric slide. If we have to, like man, it doesn't matter. Whatever fits the actual case is kind of how we fit it. And then, you know, with us, we typically like to bring a little style of flavor to, you know, our dress when we go in there. You know, we kind of like to, you know, kind of dress to impress with these ghosts too. You know, we want to make sure that they know that we're coming fresh and dipped, which is a new term that I'm going to tell you about later on.
Okay.
Dipped meaning really, really nice, nicely dressed.
Now I know what to say. I'm going to impress my kids.
They're okay. You're there, bro. I see you. Okay. You dipped. You probably dipped right now.
Not really.
So come out there dipped. Came out there dipped. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, we just really come out like just trying to have a good time and then, you know, just trying to have a, just make sure that the spirits feel comfortable with what we're doing.
Now, I don't want to give away too much about the new season. We're going to talk about that in a little bit, but let's go in the past a little bit more, maybe where you can tell us some things have happened. What is, in any one of you can chime up, maybe the funniest thing that's happened to you guys before this season, previous things you've done together, one of the funniest things that's happened to you while you're out investigating?
Oh, man, I think for me personally, I think the funniest thing that happened to me, Jawan, I think you were involved with me. It was at the Allen House, and we were in the attic. And when people realize, when they watch these shows, like they can see because they're watching us through, you know, night vision cameras.
Sure.
We can't see anything. Like, it's pitch black.
I'm still wondering about that tactic. I don't understand what that tactic's about because I'm just being honest. The ghosts can see a light. You know what I'm saying? I'm just being honest. They can see in the dark, too.
Right. Why don't ghosts come out during the daytime?
Come on. Yeah, man. Like they sleep during the day. I don't get it.
Now, ghosts work the night shift, man. They work the night shift, man. Me and Jawan, we were walking up some stairs, and it was pitch black in this attic, and I went to reach for the banister, and I missed the banister, and I end up grabbing a trash bag in the dark. And when I tell you grabbing a trash bag in the dark is equivalent to arm wrestling a ghost, man, I lost it. And then Jawan lost it because I lost it. So
Now, do you think that you get to maybe get communication going with some entities and some ghosts because you have a different kind of approach?
I would say so, for sure. I would think taking a lighthearted approach, it's respected. Because at the end of the day, everyone wants to be respected. So we go into these locations. We knock on doors before we walk into a room. Like, that's how respectful we get. Like, we just try to treat the dead as if they are living, per se.
Well, our guests are the Ghost Brothers. We're having a good time here talking about their show. It is debuting this season on Friday, March 10th, this Friday, at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 Central on TLC. Our guests are Dalen, Jawan, and Marcus, and we'll be back right after this on the Paranormal Podcast.
If you love classic TV, check out Jim's new free podcast, TV You Grew Up With. Jim interviews legendary stars and authors about the greatest TV programs ever made. Guests have included Don Wells from Gilligan's Island, Linda Gray from Dallas, Don Most from Happy Days, Judy Norton from The Waltons, and many more. Listen at TVYouGrewUpWith.com, iTunes, or wherever fine podcasts are heard. Tune in today. Now we return to the show.
We're back on the Paranormal Podcast. Our guests tonight are the Ghost Brothers, Dalen Spratt, Juwan Mass, and Marcus Harvey. They are the stars of the hit TV series Ghost Brothers, premiering season 2, now on TLC, Friday, March 10th, this Friday at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 Central. Now, Marcus, who also cuts hair when he's not hunting ghosts, had an interesting client today, someone who actually, I guess, has something to do with ghost hunting. Whose hair did you cut today, Marcus?
So the amazing thing about what's happened with our lives is that, you know, we get to be in so many different areas. Like, and I cut hair for a TV show called Survivor's Remorse, which is on Starz.
Mm-hmm.
And today we had Ernie Hudson on set, so I had to cut Ernie Hudson's hair, who is the first. He's the Jackie Robinson of ghost hunting for black guys. Like, Winston was the first ghost brother. The OGB is what we call him. The original ghost brother.
I like that.
That's who he was.
I'm guessing you talked to him about you doing the show and everything, right? He knew you did the show?
Yes.
Oh, that's cool.
There's actually a video on my Instagram storyline with him saying something about mentioning about us ghost hunting. So if you guys want to check it out, it's on. You can follow me on Instagram, V Marcus Harvey, and just go to my story. And you can see it in there, and it's a cool little situation, man. It felt like I was the torch was getting passed from, you know, Winston to the real Ghost Brothers. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, I love it! I love it. That's awesome. When you said that, I'm like, Ernie Hudson. That, in fact, I've got like a couple Ghostbusters like action figures or something behind me. So that's how much I love that show. So that movie, that's great. Now, let's talk about the upcoming season. I'm looking here, and it looks like you're really going to some interesting places. Jamaica, Montego Bay, San Jose, California, Louisiana, my home state, Ohio. You're really getting around. Give us a little preview of what we're going to see on season 2.
Oh, man, everything is bigger and better this season. I'm talking about we have better equipment. We have better, bigger, larger locations. And like, you're going to see some sand. You're going to see some ocean. You're going to see a lot going on this season.
We look like tech symbols. We're tech symbols of ghost hunting.
Right.
And I mean, being on, you know, Dalen, I got to believe being on TLC, that's really just an awesome boost.
And that's a blessing. Like, that's like, we can't even put barriers on or limitations on this show. Like, you know, it's a blessing to be in this position, to even be put on Destination America, and then now to be put on TLC, which is a much larger platform. Like, it's amazing. It's amazing. It's a huge blessing for it.
Now,
we're excited to be able to, you know, be opened up to a whole new lane of viewership.
And one thing I think is great that you're doing is the fact that, you know, you turn into a lot of these ghost hunting shows, and they all do, you know, they're doing their thing, and I respect what they do. But you got a lot of guys that look like me, middle-aged white guys. And I think it's great to get diversity into this and show that really these kind of subjects, this is universal. I mean, this is all of us. If you're a human, this is your ball game. I mean, we all wonder about the afterlife. We all wonder about ghosts. So I applaud what you're doing. I think it's fantastic. On maybe a more serious note, can you talk about the, Marcus, we'll start with Marcus, the importance of telling maybe minority kids and minorities in general, and diverse populations, hey, this is for you too. It's not just for one group of people. It's for everybody.
Yeah. You know, I think we speak to just people being open to being adventurous, period, you know, diverse, whether it be, you know, minorities, the majority, whatever may be the case, whatever, you know, social class you're in. I think we just kind of show and inspire people that, you know, you don't have to necessarily be in one box. You can just kind of like search, like, you know, like that's what life's about, searching. Search. You got to search to see what's going to happen next. Like, I mean, that's the only thing that keeps us living. So I think that if with us being able to try to even, you know, investigate, you know, the afterlife, I think it's just something that's kind of cool and unique, not only just to, you know, black guys, black kids, you know, or, you know, little black girls or whomever, But, you know, just anybody who's just like, who thought that, you know, it wasn't cool to kind of like ghost hunt. It's like, bruh, I mean, guys, you would not believe every time I cut somebody's hair or talk with some of the, you know, the guys that I talk with, you know, some of the biggest names in entertainment, they all have a ghost story. They all hey, man, so, you know, a ghost for real, bruh? Because, you know, my uncle be coming to me. I'm like, hey, dog, I want to hear all this. You know what I'm saying? I'm not trying to investigate you right now. I'm just trying to cut your hair, boss. You feel what I'm saying? So right. It's just like...
I'm not trying to investigate you right now.
I ain't trying to investigate. I ain't got that hat on right now. I'm just cutting. But it's just, I think it's just cool to know that, you know, everybody, like, even for the person to think, like, that only the cool kids, you know, only the nerds or whatever, like, we represent everybody. The cool kids, the nerds, the jocks, the, you know, whoever, we everybody in every little Sweet 16 movie, we repping it all, baby.
No, I love that. And the thing is, you said something there. Everybody's got a story, because this funny thing is, I podcast for a living. This is what I do, is my full-time job. And people, I tell them what they do and they kind of look at me funny and they're like, I don't know about all this supernatural stuff, but there was this one time. And then they tell me their ghost story.
Right.
That's the truth.
It never fails.
Now,
it never
fails. Everybody's got one for sure. Now, I'll ask Jawan this, and you guys can chime in too. You run into probably ghosts that have a sense of humor and some fun stuff. Have you guys ever run into anything nasty out there?
What have we run into? I'm really sure we have. I'm trying to think.
This season, we ran into some pretty dark things, man. I know they Deb won't let us really talk on it just yet, because I think that's a really powerful episode that's happened in this season. And that was in Ohio. That was in Ohio.
That's a schoolhouse, isn't it? That haunted elementary school.
We were in the House of Wills.
Oh, House of Wills in Cleveland. That's my hometown. I know exactly where the House of Wills is.
Yeah.
That is so neat.
That was a
we did there.
Oh,
that was a real dark place.
Yeah, and the thing is that, and it used to be pink. I don't know if it's painted pink anymore, but it used to be painted pink. And when I was a kid, I drove by there numerous times. So yeah, I know exactly where the house is. House of Wills is. That is a small world. In fact, but I assume you guys come from a faith based background. So I'm guessing that you have prayers and things for protection to make sure that everything's cool and you don't run into any problems long term. Yeah, I mean, you feel like you can go on these ghost hunts and not run, you know, not have fear that something's going to latch on to you.
Yeah, pray before we go to any investigation. We pray, like, before we go into any place, we pray, and then when we leave, we pray. So, like, that's just something we practice to protect us, man, just to make sure we're covered going in and coming out.
Now,
we make sure that we cover, like, you know, not only ourselves but even our, you know, our crew members. Like, we even get in the prayer line with our, you know, in the prayer circle with our crew members, just to make sure everybody's cool. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, you can kind of get numb to it, you know what I'm saying, after a while, but you make sure that you don't get caught slipping. So we definitely make sure that we always have that prayer instilled in there.
Now, I'm going to ask you about your theories, and you could tell me. Now, some people think ghosts are just like a replay, and I'll date myself. I'm quite a bit older than you, but like a tape that's not erased. Or some people say, well, they're the departed spirits of loved ones. And then other people say, they're all demonic. Where do you guys fall on what ghosts actually are? And I'll just start with Dalen.
Honestly, I think it's probably a mixture of everything that you just said. I don't think ghosts just fall into one category, like it's just someone who's trapped here, or, you know, it's a demonic spirit, or I think it's, you know, someone who's left behind or purpose who hasn't been fulfilled yet. I think it's all of that. And I think you run across different types of spirits in different types of places. Like I said, the House of Wills was that spirit. It was dark, it was demonic, it was evil. But then when we were on the plantation in the Magnolia Plantation in Louisiana, that felt welcoming. It felt loving. It felt like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just different. I think it's all of the above in my, you know, personal opinion.
What do you think, Juwan?
I would definitely like to think that, I definitely think that spirits can present themselves in all forms or facets. So I would definitely piggyback off what Daylan's saying. I think that you don't necessarily, you don't know. Like, it could be a demonic, it could be something that's benevolent, right? You could have something that's maybe here for revenge, right? Like, they just, like, or it could be they just didn't want to, they chose not to go on to the next afterlife or whatever that may be. But I think it's just all of that. And I think, like, us being in it and us trying to seek certain answers is what makes it interesting, because you never know what that answer is. Like, you never know what you're going to end up finding. Like, is it a demon, or is it like, like the benevolent spirit at the Magnolia Plantation that was just like welcoming us to be there, I guess. I definitely believe that it encompasses all of it.
What do you think? What do you think, Marcus?
I would equate it to like how with Daylan and Juwan, they you know, do suits. So it's like there's all different types of body types, you know what I'm saying? So that's what I would say. It's just there's all different types of, like, people in the earth. Just like there's evil people, there's, you know, sad people, there's happy people. Like, so I think that everybody has, like, or every ghost or spirit that we kind of encounter, you know, during these investigations has some type of story. And that's kind of how we, like, get down to the bottom of it. And, you know, we really figure out if it's, like, a demonic, you know, situation. Like, you know, it was brought up with House of Wills, where there'd be a, like, your auntie, you know, giving you a big hug and saying, hey, baby, I got a pot of greens on the stove, you know, with the Magnolia Plantation, or it, whether it just be like a very violent type of, like, spirit, which was, what's that? That's a Gein Hotel, which was very violent and very, you know, very, very tough, you know, type of feeling. So, you know, we've had our share of, like, different situations, you know what I'm saying? You know, and I think that that's what makes our show so kind of unique, that we, you know, most of these places have been, you know, investigated, but I think that we come with a new swing and we kind of like get to the bottom of like why they're there or how they're there. Not just like, oh, are you here? Okay, cool, you're here. But like, why are you here? Do you get mad when they do this, that, you know, you try to get connect with that spirit, but not where you could go home. I mean, you have to stay there because that's your house. I got my own house.
I mean, this is the first time that we've go ahead.
Oh, no, we were just chiming in on what Marcus was saying. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, with you guys, I've never spoken to you before. This is the first time, but you can really tell that you really have like a kind spirit and you're really interested in this and you want to do the right thing and have some fun while you're doing it too. So, I applaud you and I think it's great. So, TLC is the place, and it's this Friday, March 10th, 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 Central, to check it out. Now, what's the first episode going to take us to?
Oh, man. We're
first
going
episode,
to
Thornhaven. In Indiana.
Ooh, Thornhaven, man.
It looks like, it has one of the creepiest looks I've ever seen on, like, a property.
Mm-hmm.
What'd you say, Mark? It looked like it was crying.
Ooh.
Hey, I've never seen a house cry before until we pulled up to that Thornhaven Manor. The house looked like it just got done watching, like, you know, some sad movie.
Yeah.
The Notebook. Yeah, that house looked like it just got done watching The Notebook. Good job.
Oh, it wasn't funny when I said it. Okay.
Right. No, that house is like, it's creepy.
Well,
it's creepy.
I know we're going to have to tune in. So this Friday, everybody, drop what you're doing. If you can't be there, be sure you DVR it, but you should watch it live. Friday, March 10th, 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 Central on TLC, The Ghost Brothers. The Ghost Brothers have joined us tonight. Daylan, Juwan, and Marcus. Gentlemen, thank you so much. You're great guys. I really appreciate you taking some time out of your busy schedule.
Oh, man, thank you so much for having us.
Thanks so much for tuning in to this episode of the Paranormal Podcast. I hope that you enjoyed it as much as I did, and I hope that you will go subscribe, rate, and review the shows wherever you may listen. That is a tremendous help and really gets the word out, because we don't have those big marketing budgets, but we do have you. Also, please feel free to share on social media, Facebook, Twitter, whatever it might be. That is always very helpful. Tell your friends online or off. If you're part of a paranormal group, tell them, because, you know, some people never think to look at podcasts, realizing that they can get this kind of content for free. I hope you'll do that for me. I'd certainly appreciate it. And we will talk to you next week on the Paranormal Podcast. Have a great week, everybody. Bye-bye. Now for the legal disclaimer. We do not accept money from publishers or content producers in exchange for interviews. However, as with most media outlets, in the majority of cases, we do receive complimentary copies of books and DVDs that we feature on our podcasts. Your purchases of books, DVDs, and other items via our Amazon.com links benefit Jim Harold and JimHarold.com and help us continue our programming. The sponsor messages you hear on the programs are paid endorsements, although we really do like them. For the full disclaimer, go to JimHarold.com, and thanks for listening.